Welcome to the Misfit Stars podcast. I'm Shannon Curtis.
And I am Jamie Hill. Hi, Shan.
Hi, Dame.
How you doing?
I never call you Dame.
Not really.
No.
My sister does sometimes.
Does he? He, she?
My sister's a woman.
Yeah. Sorry.
Gender is an artificial construct,
we're
so, you know.
30 seconds in, I'm already like...
Misgendering my sister. Really cool.
No, just tongue-tied is what I mean.
That's fine. It's just because you're so excited about this awesome pod we're going to do.
I'm so excited. Welcome, listeners.
We're doing a special nighttime pod tonight.
We're recording this at night.
Going to have to talk in my Barry White voice.
No, you don't.
I'm going to put on some sexy background music.
No, you don't.
I'm going to put the instrumental of something like Hallelujah behind this.
Oh, my
It's going to be so sexy.
It's not even a sexy song.
It's sexy sounding.
Okay.
And so the instrumental is very sexy.
We digress.
Then you put the vocals on, it's not sexy anymore.
Okay.
So hey, this is a public episode. This is episode 11. Wow.
What?
Can you even believe it?
Love it.
It's a public episode of Misfit Stars, which is brought to you by our Misfit Stars supporting members. Thank you.
Thank you, supporting members.
So cool. You know, when we say this is a public episode, I'm sure some people are like, they keep saying that sometimes. Why do they say that? We say that because if you haven't picked up on this yet, there are two kinds of Misfit Stars podcast episodes. There are the ones that are just freely available to the public, like this one.
Yay!
And then there are ones every other week that are behind kind of like you
think... They're members exclusive.
They're members exclusive. I've been saying members exclusive and not putting the X in there. I'm really making a point now of saying members exclusive.
Member exclusive.
Member exclusive podcasts. That's how the guy who does the announcement for our AAA baseball team would say it. The guy, it's a Tacoma Rainiers, but he says, ladies and gentlemen, you're Tacoma Rainiers.
Tacoma Rainiers. Right, okay, thanks for explaining that. So members exclusive.
It's a members exclusive episode every other week. So you can listen to like the first 20 minutes and then it fades out. And then we do a little pitch where you can become a supporting member.
Which we hope you do because the members of this podcast are who make it possible.
Yeah.
And they make possible lots of other things that we do in this sketchy art-making life of ours. And we're
That's right.
so grateful for their support. And if you are thinking, hey, I like this podcast. I like Jamie and Shannon.
Or maybe just Shannon.
And, you know, I want to support them.
Or maybe me. I don't know.
Or maybe you. And, you know, and I want to throw my support their way a little bit each month. That's what happens when you become a monthly supporting member of the podcast.
You're literally supporting us a little bit.
You can do that by going to misfitstars.com mm-hmm. and clicking the second big pink button that says unlock all episodes.
Yeah.
And then you can choose the level at which you want to support us. And we would be so grateful. Thank you.
Yeah, thanks a lot. It means a lot to us. And you're casting your lot in with us when you do that. And it means a great deal. Thank you.
So a bit later on this episode, we're going to get into a listener topic. This is the listener topic that we were supposed to discuss last week, but we got so long-winded
with last
week's podcast.
We got into it.
We just didn't get to the listener topic. So this listener topic, as with all of our listener topics, was suggested by one of our Misfit Stars members, Mystery Listener T.
That's right.
And
sometimes people don't want their names shouted out.
That's okay. Yeah. So we're going to be talking about, in this question, this listener topic, about what it's like to be in a relationship where one person is sober.
Like me.
Like Jamie. And one person is what we call a normie.
Like Shannon.
And it's going to be a fun discussion. So that'll be in the second half.
Yeah.
But first half, here
we
are.
So what did we get into this week, Shannon?
Well,
bunch of stuff.
One thing we did the other night, we went to a neighborhood activism event.
Sort of.
Fundraiser. There's a development that someone wants to do like a few blocks away, just in our little neighborhood. Our little neighborhood's just like 4 square blocks, sort of. Like, it's not very big.
It's very small.
And
it's like a 2-block by 2-block kind of thing, literally. There's like 40 homes in it or something.
Residential. It was built in the mid-century in the 40s.
45-ish.
And there's this developer who came in and bought some land and tore down some houses and wants to build a storage complex in our neighborhood. And it wouldn't really affect us so much where we live in the neighborhood, but
not
it certainly affects other people in our neighborhood, and it also breaks an old neighborhood covenant.
Yeah.
And
the neighborhood came with rules when it was built.
And this big developer wants to come in and just ignore the covenant.
They're not even from here.
No,
they're from like, Spokane.
Yeah. And so the neighborhood has sort of like bound together. Is that the right
rally
phrase? Rallied together.
Banded
together.
Yeah.
to fight this because they want to keep the residential neighborhood that in which that we all belong residential. I don't think anyone objects to the idea of more residences being built because we need more housing in the city.
Yeah.
But the this idea is not of that. A place where people can store stuff they're not using is not exactly in the spirit
and
of this.
And why put it in the residential neighborhood? Why don't you put it half a mile south down in the industrial part where all the other big dumb buildings are?
Totally. So, you know, the neighborhood is banded together and they had this like spaghetti feed fundraiser with an auction.
It was so fun.
It was actually really fun. I thought, no, we're going to go. We'll pay our ticket for the, you know, the thing. We're going to donate to the legal fees because that's part of the deal is like there's like a lawsuit involved.
The neighborhood is getting sued. The entire neighborhood is being sued by this a-hole developer. Yeah. Like as opposed to just being like, oh my gosh, so sorry. Didn't realize there were rules. We will gracefully bow out and sell this property at a profit anyway.
Yeah.
They're like, no, we're going to sue you to break your covenant. Really?
Right. So
screw you guys.
The neighborhood, it's really inspiring actually because there's been a group of people who've organized to raise money to pay legal fees to fight this. And we've got the rules on our side, but it's a matter of having to pay for legal representation to take it to court and all that. And it's actually looking really good, but it was an exercise in taking care of each other, you know, because the small number of people who would be directly affected by this development certainly would not have been able to afford to fight it on their own.
No. And it's which is why they did the lawsuit in the first place, to try to make it like financially onerous so they just backed down.
Exactly. So it's been really inspiring that the neighborhood has rallied. So we went to an event for that, which
was so fun.
We met new neighbors.
We both won the raffle.
We won a raffle.
Both of us. Each of our tickets won. We each got one ticket just for walking in the door and we like got to go pick something off of a table.
It was really a great little event.
It was so fun. Yeah. Shannon got a hand-turned wood bowl.
Beautiful.
And then later met the guy who made it.
Yep.
She's walking through the room and he's like, you got one of my bowls. He's 80 years old on a cane. He was lovely.
It was great.
Very neighborhoody.
Yeah. So what else did we do this week?
Shannon turned in a wonderful personal song to somebody.
Oh, thanks. I'm glad you think it was wonderful.
I think it was amazing.
I struggled with it though. Like I rewrote
the
song.
It was epic.
Thank you. But I had to like tear the whole thing down and start over a couple times. It was like, you know, I think I talked about it on the podcast last week that I was working on it. And just figuring it out. It was the song that I wrote, a really different sort of personal song because it wasn't about a person. This person wanted me to write a song about climate change.
Yeah.
Whew, that's a big topic.
Which, by the way, people, is happening.
Yeah.
For Christ's sake.
Right. So, yeah, it was a really challenging and rewarding topic to tackle. And I'm grateful for the opportunity to have done it. So whenever I send off a personal song, then when it's done, I'm always like,
it's very nerve-wracking for you.
I like it. And she loved it. So that was
Shannon's done
really
like
rewarding.
75 of these. And she has a 75 for 75 success rate of people being completely stoked with their song.
Oh, well.
No, it's true.
Okay.
But like every time she sends one off, she's like, maybe this is going to be the one.
Well, no, I just take really seriously what people have entrusted me with.
It's very sweet.
Yeah.
It's very earnest and sweet.
And I'm working on another, I'm not working. I finished actually 2 days ago writing, but we still have to finish mixing and that kind of thing. Another personal song, which was another sort of challenge. This was actually, I was telling a person's story in this one. And it was a really interesting challenge for me because it required me to put myself in the shoes of a trans person. And write from their perspective.
That's so cool.
Which was really, I mean, an honor to get to do that.
So is the song like a gift from a trans person to their partner?
No.
Or
well,
vice versa, or what?
It was a gift, but the gift was not like, I'm going to write a song about you and give it to you. The gift was, Shannon, I want you to write a song for my partner and write about her experience as a trans person. Mm. And so I got to know this person's story. And I mean, what a unique way to get to sort of expand my understanding of a trans experience because that's not been my experience, you know? And
well, yeah.
It's something we were talking about this in the group just earlier today, actually, apropos of the last week's podcast about toxic masculinity and the idea of gender roles and that kind of thing. I mentioned to one of the people in the group that, you know, this is an area that I'm wanting to learn more about, and this was a great opportunity to learn more.
Yeah, and like related on the LGBTQ tip, like in that same conversation, someone else was sharing their experience with toxic masculinity as a lesbian.
And like
all the stupid things that all the stupid questions that drunk men have for lesbians, you know, like which one of you's a guy and et cetera, you know, and
eye roll
for sure, but like talk about stuff like we never have to even think about that, right?
No, I know.
And it's nice. It's eye-opening to like just get to know other people's experiences
totally.
For better or for worse.
Totally. What did you get into this week?
Well, you and I took an epic hike around Chambers Bay.
Oh, that was fun.
That was lovely. We live in the most beautiful place.
I'm constantly stunned.
It's just like shocking. There are these mountains that you're facing when you're on the west edge of our city, and there, it's on the peninsula that it faces, called the Olympic Peninsula, and they're the Olympic Mountains. And, you know, by day, they're a mild-mannered temperate rainforest, but then by night, they're also like an epic volcanic mountain range.
Is it volcanic? It must be. I don't know. Actually, I don't know if it's volcanic.
It would be shocking if we're the only mountain range around here that wasn't.
Well, I guess at some level, all mountains are formed by the earth moving and...
getting excitable.
Yeah. It's all related to the magma.
Magma. Boiling hot magma. Yeah.
That was a great hike. It's a beautiful, beautiful hike. Yeah. What else?
I also got going on mixing a punk record this week.
It's true. You did.
Which has been so much fun for me.
They're
oh
really
my gosh.
Great songs. They're really fun. Catchy.
They're wonderful. I mean, like a long song for this band is 3 minutes and 10 seconds.
I love it.
You know, and they're more like, you know, 250.
Yeah.
It's great. And they're all like really kind of similar in speed and kind of similar in structure. Like I have been working from a template system. Like I kind of did the first one and got all the stuff that I'm doing to it sort of organized. And then I just been sort of starting from there with all the subsequent songs. And on one of them, like the markers that I dropped for like verse 1, chorus 1, verse 2, yeah, chorus two, lined up almost exactly with the second song.
That's very funny. It's true. They all do have sort of a similar tempo and feel. But then I was listening to the lyrics of one of them as you were working the other day. And it's just like really like up tempo. Like if you weren't paying attention to the words, you'd be like, this is a high energy, feel good tune.
It's pop punk, yeah.
And then you listen to the lyrics and it's just about, man, somebody's home life is rough right
now. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
You know?
It's very deep.
Yeah. It was an interesting sort of contrast between the vibe of the song and the like just deeply heartfelt and sort of almost sad lyrics.
Yes. Oh, heartbreaking.
It was interesting.
I love it. I mean, that to me is just the best way to do certain kinds of music. You know, when it's subversive like that, like get you singing along first before you realize what you're singing along to.
Then I'm like,
and then it's inside you.
Heartbroken and lost. And
Oh, it's wonderful. You get to experience all these like bonus emotions.
Yeah, that's true.
It's really nifty.
Yeah.
And it was cool. You know, and this project has been awesome for me because like I just kind of took it on a wing and a prayer. Like this band could only really afford my rate to mix like one song.
Yeah.
But like, I really like the people involved, one guy in particular. And
who's been a huge influence and a friend to you for a long, long time.
Yep, absolutely so. And, you know, they have an 8-song record. I knew also that it would be pretty simple material. I mean, it's pop punk, right? So there's like 16, 19 tracks per song. It's not like these are like 100-track, like Los Angeles pop epics, you know, or whatever. It's like just, you know, 3-piece, guitar, bass, drums, some vocals, and backing vocals. It's not complicated. I can do it quickly. And so I was like, hey, how about this? I'll mix the whole record for the price of one song.
I'm a good businessman.
Yeah.
And
is this good business? Am I doing this right?
Right.
You know?
So why'd you do that?
I'll tell you why I did that. Because in the moment, it just felt like the right thing to do. And it's really just like this gut level thing that I don't really have any better way of explaining than that.
Yeah.
It just was the kind of thing, like it just sort of came to me. Like I have a little extra time. I like these people. And I got really excited about the idea that for me in this moment, like something I could really do that would just bring tremendous value to them would be to like give them something so much better than they could possibly have expected.
Right.
It like just in a situation that they just couldn't possibly like pay for.
Right.
And just give that to them. Like, I know what their budget is.
Right.
And to be able to give them something that's just like 8 times better than that and really have them be super stoked. Like, I want for these people with these really wonderful little songs that they have made and lovingly recorded in one guy's living room.
Yeah. Yeah.
To have something that they're really, really proud to take out into the world and to like leave a little tiny mark with.
Yeah.
I just think that could be really special, you
know? Yeah, absolutely.
And it's only going to take me a few days and, you know, and it's going to be really great. And it just felt like the right thing to do.
Hmm. Which I think is a good segue to what we're going to be talking about today.
Thanks, baby.
So we've mentioned this idea a few times on the podcast when we've talked about other topics, but this idea of doing the next right thing.
Yeah,
right?
It comes up.
It comes up quite a lot. And apropos of that, we've actually had a few different people comment in our online group, which members of the podcast, supporting members, are part of this online discussion group.
Did we mention that? You get access to this wonderful private Facebook group. We have awesome discussions in there. Anyway, moving on.
And so this group, a couple different people have brought up this idea of the next right thing and being really intrigued by that idea.
Yeah.
And wondering if we could talk more about what is the next right thing how do you identify what that is? How does that work practically in your life? And specifically, one of our members, Scott, had some specific questions regarding this topic. He and some others have talked about it, but his were just really like well-defined. He said, what are some guiding principles to determine the next right thing? How does one know what is right in a given context? Is it consistent with good morals? Is it a moral question? Is it something that generally moves the ball in the direction of some more fuzzy hope or dream? Does it increase happiness or decrease suffering? I think that ultimately this discussion opens a larger discussion about values. So this was Scott's commentary, which
thanks,
all
Scott.
Really great. Yeah. Really great points. And I'm not sure we're going to go one by one through his specific questions, nope. But I think that probably we'll get to all of them in some form as we sort of like tease this apart.
I bet.
A little bit.
I bet we will.
Yeah. So I remember the very first time I really understood for myself the concept of the next right thing.
What was that?
And I think what we've talked about this on the podcast once before.
Well, remind me. I've got a terrible memory.
I will tell you. So, I mean, it was back when, before we were doing house concerts, maybe even before we had started putting out like regular releases, album releases, I was in between, an in-between phase of my career where I'd made some EPs and I was just trying to figure out how to do what I do.
You were in a writing transition. Your style was changing. Yeah. Everything was changing.
And in the midst of that, you were doing a recording project with an artist who was like super like type A, plan it all out. I've got a plan. I'm going to network with the right people and I'm going to do steps A through Z. Yep. And then I'm going to be successful.
Yep.
Ta-da! And I remember, like, at the time, you're like, well, maybe you should, you know, go to some of these networking events or start thinking about the way this person thinks about it.
Yeah.
And I had this, like, visceral reaction
like
against that.
Like a physical reaction.
I'm like, no!
It's true.
Because it didn't feel right to me. It's not my personality. It's not my style.
Mm-mm.
But I remember really at that time in my career, in my life, identifying really for the first time what it meant to do the next right thing. Mm. In terms of my career. And for me at that time, I knew that I wanted to write songs.
Yep.
And share them with people.
Yes.
And
that was kind of it.
That was kind of it.
Like,
and
really?
Honestly, that's still kind of it. Like, really, that's it. And we're going to get to this idea, yep, in a minute. But I knew that I want to write songs and share them with people. And so the next right thing for me to do was not to go to 1,000 networking events in Los Angeles and try to schmooze my way to somebody important who might open a gate to me to be successful.
Yeah.
What I knew based on those values, that goal of writing music and sharing with people, I knew that I just needed to get in my room and write some music.
Yeah.
Like, I hadn't really written in a while at that point.
You're kind of like in the middle. I think this transition kind of made you unsure about things.
Sure.
And you just kind of weren't really comfortable with who you were as a writer at that time.
Right.
So it was just kind of like easier not to.
Right. So I knew at that point, the next right thing was for me to get in my writing room and start writing some songs.
Yep.
And that's what I did. You know, and, you know, eventually some of the other parts of how my career sort of came together became clearer over time, but I didn't have that roadmap then.
No.
I only knew what the next thing was. And so I think that's like the fundamental idea about the next right thing is that it is something that allows you to not have to take things in big whole chunks.
Yeah. Big, overwhelming, undoable chunks.
Right. And when I say things, I mean things like, you know, career ambitions or how to get through your day. You know, like the thing that you're breaking up into smaller chunks can be very big and also very small.
Yeah, it can be like life scale events or like, what am I going to do? How do I get through the next 2 hours?
Right, exactly.
Yeah.
So I think the concept applies, but it's not overwhelming yourself with the idea that you have to know how you're going to get all the way to the end. You just break it up into the next manageable bite and start there.
Yeah. And I don't think that people should confuse this to mean that like it means you should never have a plan for stuff.
Oh yeah.
Like, it's good to like think about how you would ideally hope that things would go.
Or how they might go.
Yeah. And like even make out a roadmap and like, that's great. Like, make a roadmap and get going. But then just like have the flexibility.
Well, that's the thing, is that when you take things one step at a time and doing the next right thing, you allow yourself the flexibility to change as things go, because you will be given new information. You'll be confronted with new information. Things will change.
Like, you don't want to be the person who's like totally doing the plan, like in direct conflict with obviously available information to the contrary.
Yes, exactly.
Like, you really want to be dynamic as you move through your life, and you want to be able to be like, okay, things have changed. Or I didn't like apprehend this correctly. I didn't perceive this exactly correctly to start with, and I made false assumptions, but now I'm going to course correct.
Right, right, right. Exactly. Yeah. It gives you the flexibility to do that. It's like the Waze app for life.
Whoa. Does it mean it's going to make you take a left to cross four lanes of traffic with a two-way stop? I hope not. I hope that metaphor doesn't totally hold.
Me too, me too. Yeah. But, you know, like, I think having that kind of flexibility to change is good. And I think that figuring out what the next right thing is also fundamentally something that requires you to be fully present in the current present moment.
Yeah.
Right? So this is an idea that comes up a lot. You know, I have a tendency to future trip.
Yeah.
Right? Like, I have a tendency.
And me too sometimes.
Yeah.
You and I are built similarly in some ways.
Yeah. And I know that when I start future tripping, inevitably I start feeling anxious and overwhelmed. And
well, trying to control the future is very hard.
It's very hard to control the future. I feel like this is the beginning of a villain story. I want to control the future.
It's like a bad origin story.
It really is. Yeah. But I think that identifying the next right thing, doing the next right thing, is something that requires you to first be present. And there's a couple things to notice about that. Is that first is that you're not focused on 10 steps down the road.
Right.
Right. So if we're talking about a big goal, big, you know, a big life thing, you're not necessarily focused on what's going to happen next month or next year or 5 years from now.
Right.
You might have some ideas, and that's okay.
It's good to keep stuff at like the back of your mind. Keep like the general vision there. There's nothing wrong with that.
Sure. But you don't have to know, you don't have to have it all planned out from here till the end of time. Right.
Yeah. So, you don't need to know that you're on step 7 of 284.
Right. And here's another like twist on this idea about being present.
What's that?
Is that it also requires that you not live in the past, right?
Yes.
It also means that you're not focused on how you've done it before.
Yeah.
Or who you were before.
Yeah.
Like last year or yesterday. You're a new person today. Like,
and things have changed.
Things have changed.
Like, you might be the same person that you were, but for sure the whole world around you has changed a little bit.
Absolutely.
And like, everything's always in flux.
We're all changing all the time. It's a new morning. I'm a new woman, you know? But that's the gift of each
Maybe that's why I'm always so excited to see you each morning. Waking up with a new morning each day. I'm living the dream.
Oh my gosh.
That's not true.
Yeah. So,
that's not the dream, just to be very clear.
What a freeing thing, though, to be able to just like let the past go and just exist back there, and to realize that you don't have to do it the way that you once did.
Yeah.
It's just about what's right for you right now.
And like, even if you did it a really great way, like, this really resonates for me in terms of like, just like a really mundane thing, like the way I mix records.
Yeah.
You know? Like, I never mix two records the same way. Like, if someone came to me and were like, hey, I really love the sound of X record that you made, I would love a record that sounded exactly like that. I don't know if I could do that.
No, it's impossible.
Because I have all the same gear, but like, I am not the same person.
Well, and the music is not the same.
Yeah.
And the artist is different.
Even if the artists were the same, I don't think I could do it.
Right.
You know, because I have changed.
Right.
And like, my relationship to music and like the values that I'm currently like I think that I generally always have the same values, but certain things are at different places in the forefront or background of my mind. And like, I'm constantly in inner change.
Right.
So how could I possibly, it's like that old saying, like, you can never observe the same river twice.
Oh, who said
Whoa.
That?
Whoa, I don't know, some like, I think like ancient like Buddhist guy.
That's beautiful.
I know.
I really like that a lot.
Yeah.
I like that a lot.
Yeah.
So if doing the next right thing is something that requires us to be in the present moment, then I thought it would be interesting for us to explore some ideas about how do you experience, how do you put yourself in a state of presence?
Right.
What are some tools that we can employ to bring our focus to the present moment? Do you have any that you do?
Oh, absolutely.
Okay.
You know, a big thing for me is just reducing the number of stimuli that I have.
Yeah.
Because like, it's so easy these days just to be constantly overstimulated. Like, you think you're thinking about something or focusing on something, but your phone dings and you're sort of in Facebook and you got an alert about some news and,
yeah,
you know, maybe there's a record going on in the background or something. Like,
right.
That's five stimuli.
Right.
You know, it's genuinely hard to just get into a quiet, reflective space.
Yeah.
You know?
You have to do it intentionally.
Boy, especially when you're self-employed, because like, you could be taking a quiet moment to get reflective, or you could be doing something that could make you money.
Right.
You know?
I know, that's really tough for those of us who are self-employed, for sure.
And it's not in my nature either. Like, I'm a reflective person, mm-hmm. but I'm not, like, I'm pretty hyped up. Like, I'm not a
cool. You don't say.
No, it's true. I have a lot of energy, Shannon. And so, like, you know, it's easy for me to think about things on the go and to think about five things at once, but to, like, really kind of get quiet and try to clear the inner chatter in my mind is, like, one of my life's defining challenges.
Right. So, like, putting the phone face down and turning the sound off.
Yep.
Closing the laptop.
Mm-hmm.
We don't have TV, so we don't have to worry about shutting that off. But shutting off external stimuli is a helpful thing.
Yeah.
You know, just sitting in a comfortable place and maybe closing your eyes, like focusing on breath, you know, mm-hmm. like actually paying attention to breaths coming in, breaths going out. Like it helps to just bring you into an awareness of where you are presently. It's a skill that I learned in yoga.
I was going to say, this sounds exactly like yoga.
Yeah. I mean, that is one of the fundamental principles of yoga, right? But like maybe guided meditation would help you get into that state of mind, or...
Like you can use an app for that. There are guided meditation apps aplenty. Lots of them for free.
There are. It's so true.
And like they're really good too.
Guided relaxation things like that. That sort of thing could be really helpful.
Reiki stuff, that kind of thing.
I know that there are some people for whom the getting still and getting quiet is actually really difficult and also distracting. Like there are some people who need to do something to focus also. Like I understand that that's a possibility.
Maybe I'm one of those people.
Maybe you are.
Ah.
Well, you know,
I don't feel so bad.
But like I know I've heard people say that sometimes if that's the case for them, like doing like stream of conscious journaling, or writing, you know, like typing without thinking or taking a pen and writing without thinking, without really paying attention even to what is coming out on the page.
You know what's good for me in that way is like dishes.
Doing dishes.
I kind of find that sometimes like if I have like, cause like the way our morning usually goes is like we get up and we have breakfast and like we'll make it, one of us will or both of us will, then we'll eat it and we'll do sort of our morning emails. And sometimes something will come up in an email or something we're looking at in the morning. I find sometimes that then if I go to do the after breakfast dishes, just that kind of spacing out, doing dishes time, those 10 minutes that I spend.
Interesting.
Sometimes at the end of it, I have an idea.
Interesting.
You know, it's sort of bubbled its way up, kind of almost like unbidden. That's sort of like my version of you taking a nap when you're writing songs.
Interesting. But dishes, that's so much more productive than napping.
I don't know. Napping is pretty productive.
Well, it gets to the same place, I suppose. But yeah, but I don't have clean dishes when I'm done.
No, but you have a nice nap under your belt.
That's so true.
Love.
I think that the point in all of this for me, like, and I am, you know, I'm really just speaking from my own experience here. So, you know, take this for what it's worth.
Maybe it'll be helpful to someone,
though. Maybe it will. But for me, I think that the focusing on the being present and starting to listen to my inner thoughts, you know,
listening, that's such a good word.
Yeah. It's about coming to a place where I'm listening to my most honest thoughts. Right. Cause like I have lots of thoughts where I'm judging myself questioning myself. But getting to that place where I'm listening to my thoughts and being able to recognize like, yep, that's true.
Can I ask you a question?
Yeah.
How do you know which ones are the honest ones?
It's a good question.
Like what if you're just bullshitting yourself?
I might be. Maybe I am.
No, but seriously, like, do you have a way?
Well, so for me.
Or a technique or like a.
Yeah.
Yeah?
I mean, sort of. It's not like a technique. It's again, I think that probably having done yoga practice has really helped with this idea, but it's paying attention. I pay attention to what I've learned what it feels like in my body. Like, to hear myself honestly. Huh. And the way that it feels for me is like a feeling of being settled.
Oh.
Like a feeling of being at ease. Like I'm not fighting myself or questioning myself.
Do you physically relax?
Yeah. There's this, like my blood pressure goes down.
Huh.
Like I don't feel, when I am recognizing that I've had an honest thought, it feels like resolve.
Almost like you're kind of like aligned with the universe or something.
Sure.
You could, not to sound totally woo-woo, but you know.
But I think that that's, you know.
Like nothing's dissonant or pulling.
Yeah, yeah. Because honestly, when I'm having an internal debate about what I ought to do, how I ought to spend my time, what's right or wrong, like there are lots of things that can inform that internal conversation.
Mm-hmm.
Like What do other people think I should do? What do other people think is right? What will it look like to others if I... It's funny how it really kind of like comes down to like judgment from others or like perceptions of others that might others might have of me. But like, so like it's weeding that stuff out. I know when those other thoughts are like informing the discussion, I feel tense. I feel anxious. I feel unsure. But when I am able to settle myself into a place of listening honestly, I know when the true thoughts come because I feel it in my body like a, okay. And what's interesting to me is that when I have that, even if getting to that point has felt somewhat stressful or uncertain, once I have the honest thought and I recognize what the next right thing is, I feel motivated to do it. Whereas prior to that, if I'm feeling stress or overwhelmed, I might feel like I just don't want to deal with it. I want to take a nap. I want to do anything but the thing that I think is nagging at me. But once I get that honest thought, then I actually feel motivation to do it.
Man, I relate to something that you just said so much. It's actually like apropos of the punk band thing. So like I was sort of tossing around because the way like the my friend approached me about this is, you know, we have a small budget and we are wondering if maybe you'd be able to mix four songs, you know? And I mean, the budget was, you know, not even what it would be to mix one song, you know? And so I was kind of like, well, obviously this is not like a fee for service thing. There's something else going on here. Obviously the universe is giving this to me for some reason. So I was like, well, how many songs do you have? And it turns out they have 8 songs. But like they were so like reluctant just even to ask for like the very, very low rate for to mix the four. They just wanted to ask for four, which was so touching to me and so sweet, you know? So what, like once I kind of got my arms around what the whole situation was and realized that it was just going to really just be something that I could do to do something good for the world, you know, and put good energy into the world. I got that same feeling that you're talking about, that kind of just like happy sort of, oh, this is going to be cool. And I'm excited to do it kind of feeling, you know? But I did... And can I share with you, I had like a little sticking kind of thing and it was a, what will people think of me? But the people was you. You know why? Because there was a financial component to it with me giving away my time. And because you and I are kind of business partners, I was like, is Shannon going to be disappointed with me that I'm making so little money on this project?
Oh, interesting.
Yeah.
It turns out I was fine with it, right?
Yeah, you were. You were.
I was like, yeah, you should do that.
Yeah.
That's cool. But that's interesting that that was the thing that was like, but when that... That your thought about what I might think was the thing that was making the rubbing happening.
Yeah, like I didn't want to disappoint you or for you to think that I was like doing something really dumb or something.
That's so interesting. Well, what's interesting to me, this is the segues into the next area, this next discussion area, I think, really nicely. Because, well, because
I'm like it, Mr. Segway today.
You are. You're just providing me segues left and right. You don't even know. But I think what's interesting about the situation that you just described is that, like, you knew it was the next, you knew it was the right thing for you to do this record for very little money. That was based on a set of values that you have about your life and your work, right? That so I read this quote. This was really interesting as I was looking up sort of other people's ideas about the next right thing before we did the podcast.
You were doing research,
I read somebody's reflection on this is that that doing the next right thing is a microcosm of a values-led life. Which is interesting. And it's and another thing they said is it's how we translate values into action. So like I know that it is a value of yours to be a person who helps artists make and put their art out into the world. That is what you do for money, but it is also what you do just because it's what you want to be doing in the world, right? Like it's your job, but it's also like your...
It's my job because I have figured out how to get money for the thing I would do anyway.
Right, but it's also your mission. You know what I mean? Like it's what you value. You want artists to make art and put it in the world. You want to live in a world where there is art. And so you...
Especially DIY stuff, you know? Like the backstory to this project was so compelling to me. Like it's such a value of mine to uplift people who are doing this. Setting up the four microphones that they have in their living room that sounds like crap and just plugging it into GarageBand. They record this whole record into GarageBand doing the absolute best that they could, you know? And to uplift that kind of energy in the world is, as you said, a huge value of mine.
It is. And so this was a, this was like a microcosm of you living out in this... In this small way, which is not a small way, it's a big deal, but like it's one little piece of you living your values actively.
I love it.
Right? Like,
yeah.
So it's an interesting way to think about it. So I think that it, in defining like what the next right thing is for us in our lives, mm-hmm. again, the big things and the small things, how do I get through this day? How do I get through this phase of grief I'm in over a situation in my life? Or how do I pursue this big career goal I have? Whatever the thing is, mm-hmm. in determining what the next right thing is, we sort of have to identify what our values are.
Yeah.
In order to understand or to know when that honest voice is speaking and saying, this is what you should be doing next.
Yeah, right. Because otherwise, like in absence like of like strongly held values,
right.
like how you're rudderless, right? Like right. you don't know what you're aiming at.
Right. So you start with it. Like so how do you define values? It's a simple question. What's important to me?
Yeah.
And that's like a wide open question, right? In what's important to me? If you're talking about the big things, the big like career goal type things, what's important to me in my life? What's important to me in the world? If it's like a small thing, like you're getting through your day, like what's important to me today? You yeah. know, like, so that's the question. I think that it's a question that not really a lot of us take the time to answer.
Yeah. And you know, I think sometimes too, it's like really, it's really easy to kind of answer like the more high level kind of like, I don't know.
World peace. Seriously. I want world peace.
Yeah, or I want healthcare for all, right? But like what, but that's not the actual value, right? That is a value, but it's not the most distilled essential version of that value. I think maybe the actual value, mm-hmm. if you were to get right down to like the primary colors version of it, would mm-hmm. be I value people being taken care of.
People taking care of each other.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. You know, but I think it's important to kind of reduce down as much as possible in this with thought process of what's mm-hmm. important to me. Mm-hmm. Get it down to the most essential mm-hmm. possible components, mm-hmm. like the building blocks, like the carbon, mm-hmm. hydrogen, and oxygen of the situation, you
right,
know, and
right.
nitrogen, whatever the other one is. But,
very
you know,
science-y,
right? Thank
like
you.
It.
Thank you so much. But get it down to the essential building blocks, right? Like, are my values, do I value kindness? You know, like, what do I value?
Right.
Like, and it's going to be a different list for everybody,
right?
But like, if you can get down to that building blocks list, maybe then, you know,
yeah.
you can figure out how those like essential values are more integrated into the sort of more abstract kind of stuff that you're trying to tackle in your life.
Right. Right. Well, I think it's easy for a lot of us to just not even take the opportunity to ask the question, right? It's easy to just get on cruise control because life is busy. There are schedules, crises come up.
Yeah.
Like it's easy to not take inventory about these kind of bigger questions, but yeah. really this bigger question really informs so much of how you'll spend your time in your life, you know?
Boy, that's true.
So, you know, it is sort of a fundamental thing. So I thought it would be interesting if we could talk about like, what are some of the tools that we can use to determine and define what's important to us? Like how do you do that? How do you decide what's important to you? Like, do you have any ideas?
Yeah, you know, and this really comes from my background with sobriety, as so many things do. But like doing an actual inventory can be incredibly helpful in things like this, mm. right? Like actually
what
writing.
What do you mean by doing an inventory?
What I mean is writing it down.
Okay.
Right? Not thinking abstractly about stuff, but mm-hmm. like actually writing down on paper the answers to your question. Like, mm. and really, like if I were mentoring somebody in this process, I would really suggest that they almost do it like a pyramid kind of thing, almost like an inverse pyramid, right? Where like at the top, like the broadest thing, you know, mm-hmm. you have like your very broad ideas about what's important to me. And then you just try to get more and more and more specific until mm. you can really put your finger on each of the things, right? Because I think that values will really filter themselves out into a few different like vertical categories.
Sure,
for
you
people.
Probably will start to see patterns about
that's what
various
I'm thinking.
Things that you yeah. write down. Yeah.
But like the process of writing for me is always super, super, super helpful in identifying stuff. Just because like yeah. when you see words on paper, it's much easier to like just look at all of them and see what the patterns and connections are
mm-hmm.
as opposed to trying to keep it all straight in your head and sort of come to decisions there, you know? Because you
right.
can like draw little lines, you can make diagrams. You know, you and I had a wonderful success with when we were brainstorming, doing the brainstorming session that led to this very podcast.
Yeah, it's true.
This podcast came from us asking what's important to us as we interact, like in the interactions between us and our community of
yeah.
supporters.
Yeah.
You know?
It's true.
It's exactly what it was.
This was the next right thing.
Seriously. It really is a literal example of this exact process.
It's so true.
Yeah.
That's funny that you brought that up. I had kind of forgotten.
I know,
here
right?
Here we are.
How
steps,
meta.
Steps down the way.
Yeah.
Yeah. So I think it's also helpful for me to like notice in other people, like other people who I see doing things that I admire or that I like.
Mm.
you know, just kind of taking mental notes about like, you know, how others are doing it and what's and what seems like they're working toward, you know, and letting other people inform, like just educating myself by observing what others are doing and like, hey, I like that. I think I value the same things that that person does in this way. You know what I mean? Sometimes it's easier for me to see it in other people before I can like acknowledge it for myself, if that makes sense.
No, totally. Something that also helps for me is like making, in a similar way to what you just said, making values-based connections with other people who are doing similar work to me.
What do you mean by that?
Well, like I read, for example, this industry magazine called Tape Op, right?
Right.
Which is largely just interviews with engineers and producers. Mm-hmm. And there's definitely people talking about like, oh, here's how I did this record. Here's how I did that. But so much more of what I find inspiring in that magazine is that people talk about like, who they are, what values they're bringing to the projects that they're working on. Like, and it's really helpful for me to be like, I resonate and identify with this person in their process, and I do not resonate and identify with this person and their process, you know? And it really helps me get clear, almost in a mirror-like way, about like who I am and what my values really are. Like when you see stuff reflected in somebody else, you
That's exactly what I was trying to say. You said so much better than I did. Yes.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, perfect. Yes, yeah. I think that's... Yeah, that's really helpful for me when I see others and I identify. Like there's like a bell ringing inside me when I see them approaching a thing a certain way, or that they've written about something or expressed themselves. Yeah, I think that too. Me too. Yeah.
And you know, I think it's really important to note that like Me Too is a really great first place to start with this kind of stuff.
Totally.
You don't have to have original thoughts about every single thing in the world. Like you don't have to reinvent every single wheel. It's perfectly appropriate to look at someone else's wheel and go, yeah, that.
Yeah.
Seriously though.
Absolutely.
Like thinking that you have to invent everything from whole cloth in your life is like a really overwhelming burden.
Right.
Like you can cobble together solutions from things that other people have done, but then you're gonna like you're gonna make it your own just by virtue of the fact that you are you.
Absolutely.
And you have your own unique set of values and priorities within yourself.
Right. And the cool thing is when you start to take that, when you start to go after those large values one step at a time by doing the next right thing, is that it will just in an iterative way take on its own life,
right? Absolutely.
Like because of that idea of like the flexibility that you offer yourself when you take it one step at a time.
Yeah.
It like you do the next right thing, you learn something new, you figure out what the next right thing is then and move on from there. Like it becomes what it's meant to become just because you're taking it.
And it's own, it becomes its own unique thing. Like you don't have to worry about that.
Right, right. So in terms of doing the next right thing in any given moment, I think so like we've kind of talked about the values, sort of what's important to us on a broad scale.
Yeah.
So
macro
in terms
values.
Of macro values. But then like what about doing the next right thing right now? Like the question could just become what's important to me right now?
Yeah.
You know, so if you've answered the bigger questions, or you've started to answer them, or you've explored those larger value questions, then when it comes time to be like, what's important right now, it helps to inform the answer to that question.
Would this be a good time to bring in this thing that our friend wrote on the internet?
Yeah.
All right, cool. So I'll read this. This is something that a dear friend of ours, Linda W., wrote, and she said...
It's something I read on her post on Facebook.
Yeah, totally. Just a thing she wrote on Facebook.
Yeah.
So many wonderful people writing profound things on our Facebook.
I love it.
Thank you, friends.
And she was, to put this in context, she's looking for some people in her local area to sort of be part of a small group that helps each other sort of like stay accountable towards some goals that she has this year.
Which, how cool.
So, yeah, it's very cool. So this is one of those things that she
So she said, and I quote, I am first working on recognizing a few of my limiting beliefs and transforming them to liberating truths. My first limiting belief, I am not a disciplined person. Liberating truth, discipline is not a destination and does not imply perfection. It is a practice developed one day at a time, attending to what is most important to me. When life seems to get in the way, I can and will pick up where I left off, because that is what growth and improvement looks like.
So, I love that. And the thing that really stuck out to me in reading her statement was this idea of a practice developed one day at a time, attending to what is important to me.
Yeah.
Attending to what is most important to me.
Yeah.
And I think that that's the thing. Like the small bite-sized chunks, mm-hmm. attending to what's important to me today, you know?
The idea of a daily inventory.
Yeah. And so I think that like just making a practice of like regularly asking ourselves the question, what's the next right thing for me in this moment? Like getting used to asking that question routinely. Maybe.
Which also requires that you ask the question, what is this moment?
Right. Get in the present moment.
Yeah.
And yeah, do those things that bring you to the present.
Yeah.
And then ask what's important to me right now. What's the next right thing in this moment? So like checking in often, maybe it's an every morning thing. Maybe it's while you're doing the dishes, or, you know, maybe it's when you're going for your daily run, or when you're...
I always try first thing when I wake up in the morning in that sort of kind of like halfway state between asleep and awake, you know, when you're just sort of mm-hmm. coming to consciousness, try to set an intention for the day,
mm-hmm.
you know? And it's usually really vague because I'm half asleep, but usually it's just something along the lines of, I hope today is going to be a good day. I'm going to try to be of service.
Right.
And it could just be as simple as that, but right. just like the idea of like having just a little mental routine, you know?
Yeah, yeah, yeah. And I think it's like a perfectly good thing to ask this question. Like, it's not like you ask this question once and then you're done, you
no.
know? Like, it's a matter of checking in. Whenever I'm feeling just a little out of sorts, and I'm like, what do I do next? What am I doing with myself today? Because being self-employed is just, I mean, it's constantly that. It's like,
yeah.
I could be doing 12 different things.
Yeah.
You know, sometimes it feels overwhelming, but like, and sometimes I can feel paralyzed by the overwhelm,
sure.
you know? But so if I'm feeling that like tension, it just checking back in, okay, let's get present. Let's get into the present moment. Let's mm-hmm. decide what's the next right thing for me to do? And just asking the question on a routine basis or doing a daily practice of asking it
yeah.
is a great way to approach it.
Yeah.
There are a couple of like extra things that I added to my list here of things I wanted to mention. They aren't really like a sequential, you know,
well,
order
okay.
of things.
But I'm so interested. What do you got?
So I think that one of the things that is important to acknowledge here in deciding to, or acknowledging what the next right thing is that it's mostly not a head question. It's
yeah.
more of a heart question. But also that don't like disregard your head altogether
yeah.
either, right? So I think
go with your gut, but like check in upstairs too.
Right. I think it's easy for a lot of us to get spun up in our heads and overthinking things.
In our logical minds, getting tangled up.
Right. So this is not really a head question.
Yeah.
Because you could argue probably any point of view about what's the next right thing to do.
Yeah.
But this is about getting centered in your
heart. Yeah, you can
heart.
Talk yourself into anything, right?
You really can.
But you cannot talk your heart into stuff.
Right. Your heart knows.
Yep.
It just does.
Yep.
So I think that was one thing I wanted to point out. But also, even though it's a heart thing, it is good to, you know, if your heart's telling you to go wander out in the middle of traffic, you know, maybe don't listen to that someone.
I mean, the heart wants what the heart wants.
But you know what I mean? It's an extreme example.
Yeah.
But like, you know, it is appropriate to bring the head in when the head is needed. But this is a heart thing.
Lead with
know.
The heart.
Exactly. And then the last thing that I thought was sort of like an important thing to remember in all this is that the next right thing will always be something that you can do,
mm-hmm.
not that you will require someone else to do.
Ah.
Right? Like this next thing that I want in my life or the next thing to do, it's got to be on your side of the street. We talk a lot about keeping your own side of the street clean,
yeah.
right? Like, and that the other
and
side
just
of the
knowing which side of the street is which.
Yeah, and yeah. that in any relationship that you have, that the other side of the street belongs to the other person,
mm-hmm.
and it is not your domain, you know. But I think that just remembering that whatever this next right thing is going to be for you is going to be something that will be up to you and that you alone can do. It's certainly great to ask for help,
yep.
you know, or
we do it all the time.
Yeah. But knowing that this is, it's your domain. It's what you're going to be doing on your side of the street next. It's not what you have decided someone else needs to do.
Yeah. Right.
You know,
I've decided that what I need the most is for you to change.
Exactly.
That does not work.
Wouldn't that be so great if we could just invent the world in that way?
But no, it wouldn't.
No,
it would be
wouldn't.
So dysfunctional and
it would.
Bad because then we wouldn't ever work on ourselves.
I know,
and everyone
I
would just be like a-holes.
You're right. It would be terrible.
Yeah, it'd be terrible.
So
good point, sweetie.
You know, I don't know if any of this has been useful. I
think it probably maybe has.
I hope so. I mean, it was actually useful for me to break down some of the like particulars because it's
mm-hmm.
a concept that I really do live with in my life a lot. I mean, I probably do ask myself on a daily basis, what's the next right thing for me to do right now? And something I've gotten used to doing over the last number of years, but I've not really thought about it in terms of like really breaking it down as to the sort of mechanism of it.
Yeah.
And that was sort of, it was interesting to do that exercise.
So I like it.
Thank you to those of you who gave us the opportunity to do that.
Yeah, thanks, people. Lead with your hearts. So we're going to take a little break. And when we get back from the break, we are going to delve into a listener topic from Mystery Listener T about being in a relationship where one person is sober and one person is a normie.
Woohoo!
Stay tuned.
See you soon.
That was a pretty epic, and we're back, huh?
It was really good. You're very TV show announcery.
I'm trying to be more, what's the guy, is it Don Pardo?
He was one. No, was he?
No, he was Saturday Night Live. Who's the guy on Price is Right? Our friend George would know.
He would know. I don't know. Yeah. I can't remember.
Well, and George, if you're listening to this, comment in the group.
Gosh, now I have to look it up, who it is.
Yeah,
it's okay.
And we can post it in the show notes.
I guess.
Because it's very important
it's
now.
It's so very important now.
So we have a listener topic from Mystery Listener T. And she asks, could you talk about being in a relationship where one person is sober, like me, and one person is a normie?
Like me.
Allegedly.
Allegedly a normie. That's part of the deal here, actually.
Yeah, and that's part of the context that we should probably just start with, right?
Yeah, for sure.
Is it like, I mean, so, you know, quote unquote normie.
Can you explain what a normie means in sober speak?
In sober speak, a normie is a person who can just drink like a normal person, right? So like Shannon, for example, for someone like me, an alcoholic, you know, like, if I was going to have one drink, I was going to have 15 drinks and I wouldn't stop drinking until alcohol was gone or I passed out or whatever,
right.
You know, fell asleep, whatever I had to do. Shannon, every so often, will have half a glass of wine or a beer and routinely will just like abandon it like 5/6 of the way through. Which to me is like alcohol abuse. Like, how do you even, like, what are you doing? Like,
you're
how
are you leaving that in the bottle?
You know,
what?
It goes in your tummy. You got to drink it for it to work. Well, panicking on her behalf, you know?
Yeah.
But, you know, because she is not preoccupied and obsessed with alcohol, like, she has a normal relationship with alcohol. And that's what it means to be a normie.
Normie.
Yeah.
Right.
Someone who has a normal, i.e., not completely dysfunctional relationship with alcohol.
Yes. But I think the real big caveat to introduce here is that I'm not a normie in terms of like the stuff that goes on inside me that's similar to the stuff that goes inside a person who is driven to drink to excess, right? The internal stuff, like we've talked about this before too, but like, you know, the idea that like alcohol is like drinking for Jamie is really not the problem. Mm-mm. It's a symptom
of
the problem of this gaping hole of need.
Yeah, the problem
and,
is me.
Inside that he had to deal with in order, or has to continue to deal with in order to not drink himself into oblivion.
Yeah.
So I actually have the same internal issues and I've been part of a 12-step program to address those things as well. A 12-step program for codependency called CODA, which saved my life. But it's all the same. It's the same program. My symptoms were just different. I don't have a problem with alcohol. My symptoms were that I attempted to fill my hole of need with the affection, approval, and acceptance of other people in relationships. And I did that by trying to control their perception of me or how they would react toward me based on how I treated them or how I gave up my identity to suit them, to suit their needs so that they would give me what I needed.
You were just jerking people around
that
to get approval.
That is codependency. Yes. Yeah, yeah. I mean, codependency often is
drinking
like,
sounds so much simpler, really.
It really is.
Hey, you can just go to the corner store and get what you need in a bottle.
Right.
None of this interpersonal interaction stuff.
Exactly. So, I mean, it's, you know, codependency can be oftentimes described as being someone who just meets other people's needs. They get, they're selfless, they give of themselves. And that is all true. Mm-hmm. But what I've learned through my program is that Yeah, I was doing all those things as an attempt to control other people's reactions toward me so that I could get that affection.
So there were serious strings attached.
There were strings attached to my selflessness.
Right.
Yeah, so that's my experience with codependency. So yes, I'm a normie when it comes to alcohol. However, I still do struggle with the same sort of internal stuff that people who suffer from other addictions do. So it's not a very fair question, I guess, to ask us to talk about sober versus normie, because I'm not completely a normie. But I think that...
But we also kind of understand the dynamic too, though, you know?
Yes, that's true. Yeah. That's true. Honestly, like, for anyone who's in a relationship with somebody who is sober, I recommend...
Or like isn't sober, but should be.
Right.
Anyone who has a problematic relationship with alcohol, either that they've dealt with or not.
Right. If you are a normie and you are in a relationship with somebody who has a problematic relationship with alcohol, dealt with or not, I recommend you get yourself into Al-Anon.
Yeah, post haste.
There's a program for that. There's a program for people who are in relationships with addicts.
There's so many programs, you all.
There's so many programs.
It's so good.
It's the same program. It's the same 12-step program. And it's, you know...
It's just different people in the rooms, people who relate to your particular set of circumstances.
Yeah. And it turns out that, like, the 12 steps are... They're just, like, basic how to be a healthier person steps.
Oh, yeah.
Like, it's...
How to look inside, figure out what's going on, and deal with it. It's not like witchcraft.
Yeah. I really wish everybody could... Like, when I discovered... When I didn't discover them. When I learned about...
Everybody, check out this thing I have found. It's called 12-step program.
When I learned about the 12-step program and I did it for myself, I was just like, oh my God, this is revolutionary. Yeah. Everybody should do this.
Well,
it would benefit a lot of people.
It's just tools for better living.
Yeah, it is.
It sucks that you have to have, like, a demonstrable outward problem.
Yeah.
To get to take advantage of these, because it's just like, it's simple, it's wonderful, it's just a way to be a better version of yourself.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, and I bemoan the fact that I didn't get exposed to these and this way of, like, analyzing what's going on inside of you in an honest and rigorous way.
Mm.
You know, in the first half of this episode, we were talking about, like, getting really honest with yourself,
right,
and really trying to identify what honestly is happening inside of you and what you think about things and how you're feeling about things. This, like, 12-step program is where Shan and I got a lot of those skills. Some people apparently have them just by default, like they're born with them, which is wild to me. I did not come equipped with that at all.
Where do you get that DNA?
Man, lucky people.
Yeah.
Yeah. You know, but I wish I'd been given those skills when I was like 14 or something. You know, it would have saved me a decade of trauma and everybody around me.
Well, and I think, you know, I know a lot of people who are in 12-step recovery for various reasons who have kids, you know, and they are able to teach what they've learned as they're parenting their kids too. So maybe it is possible that younger folks can learn these things too as they're passed down. Because it's just for me, what 12-step recovery has offered me is an opportunity to figure out how to reorganize my life, my boundaries, my relationships, and just all align them into just a healthier place, you know? And so it affects everything. I knew when I got into 12-step recovery that I did not want to be in a relationship because I got into 12-step recovery before I met you.
That's right.
But I had already determined before I met you that, like, it's going to be a requirement. I don't know how I'm going to achieve this, but I really would like to be partnered with somebody eventually who's also done this work, who also is doing this work, just because I believe so strongly in how it helps define just healthy lives and healthy relationships.
And
I
healthy wanted communication and knowing whose side of the street is whose and not trying to control your partner. And there's so many benefits to having sort of been given a formalized structure for this kind of stuff.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
And, you know, back to the suggestion that we were making to mystery listener T here, you know, in this hypothetical relationship where one person is sober and one person is a normie, like, you don't necessarily have to stay in Al-Anon forever, but, like, you can go, like, for a while, like, work through the steps once.
Just get the language and the practice of it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You pair up with somebody who's done it before you and they'll walk you through it. And it takes, a week to 2 weeks to 3 weeks, depending on the pace you do it at, but it's not hard.
Mm-hmm.
There's some reading and there's some writing. That's all. And, like, you make lists of stuff that's not working out so well in your life. And then you figure out what is your part in it and what is someone else's part in it. And then you throw away the what someone else's part, and it is, because you can't control that, and that's mm-hmm. a big lesson that you learn. Mm-hmm. And then you figure out what you can do to address the stuff that's your part, and that's all it is.
Right.
You know, and then you just unburden yourself of that stuff, you know, and it's just, it's not complicated. It's really wonderful. It feels very healing, and it like sets you up long term to have much healthier perceptions about your interactions with other human beings, because like you can just identify, this is my side of the street and I need to deal with it. But even more valuably, this other thing is not something I can control. It's mm-hmm. not my side of the street. So I can't try to do anything about it. I can't try to control it because that's not healthy behavior.
Right, right. Like for me, with in my relationship with you, if I were to see that you were screwing up, or like if I notice behavior in you that seems to be not productive for your sobriety.
Yeah.
It's not my job to make that right.
No.
You know? It is really, I mean, I suppose in a loving way, I might ask some, you know, questions.
To, and you do.
Yeah. And I think that that's one thing. But like trying to control your behavior or the outcome, you know, like really learning those, that delineation, like your life is your life.
And like if you're a sober person who's in a relationship with somebody who's an active drinker and it's a problem, like a big part of the work that you need to do is to realize that that is not something that you can control. Even though their behavior is ruining your relationship. Maybe it's ruining your marriage. Maybe it's ruining your life. Mm. Like, you can't make them do the thing that you need them to do. You can only do stuff that you can
do. For yourself.
For yourself.
Man.
It's so hard.
Which is tough. That's tough. I know there's a lot of people out there who are in relationships like that. And it's a tough thing to be in the middle of that.
Yeah. Cause you've got so much invested in it. I mean, it's not as easy. It's just like, I'm going to leave, but maybe that's the thing you got to do, but maybe it's not that easy.
Right.
So I totally get it, you know, but at least if you get yourself to a place where you can identify in a really honest way, like what you can and can't control, and like what that'll just help you like get a better idea of what the parameters are around your situation, and maybe will help inform a better path forward.
Right, right. It's also, it was really helpful for me when I joined 12-step program too, to hear other people talking about what was theirs to control and what was not. Like hearing other people describe their situations in those terms was really helpful for me to understand what in my life was mine to control and what was not. And, you know, it was really helpful to hear other folks talking about that. So, I mean, I just am a big proponent. If you're a normie in a relationship with somebody who's in recovery or who's not in recovery, but has a problematic relationship with alcohol or drugs or whatever.
Or porn or food or gambling or, I mean, whatever it might be.
It's true.
There's so many ways to fill the hole, right? And they can all be destructive to that person, to a relationship, the whole thing.
Yeah. But if you're a person in relationship with somebody who's dealing with that, there's room for you in those rooms to get in contact with other people who are walking the same road or a similar road.
Yeah.
Do you have anything more to offer?
I don't know.
We're like, this is our topic. Go to a meeting, go to a 12-step meeting. And next question. Yeah. No, I mean, that's the basic thing though. I mean, I not to be like a 12-step apologist here.
Nope.
But we kind of are, but
I think you mean evangelist.
Evangelist. Yeah, that's what I meant. Yeah. Cause it's not like I'm a card carrying 12-step evangelist, but it's been really, really hugely valuable in my life.
Absolutely.
And I wish that other people had more opportunity to get themselves in it.
I wish everyone could do it one time.
Yeah.
Yeah. So what do you think, T? Was that helpful?
I hope so.
Hopefully it just gave you a little insight at least into how it is for us, you know, our relationship with each other, you know? Like, I think it's as with any healthy relationship, and I don't think it really at the end of the day even it has that much to do with like one person being sober and one person being a normie. Each person is an individual, and the question is what kind of healthy or unhealthy interpersonal relationship skills do you bring to the relationship, you know?
Right, right.
Like, you could have somebody who's got a drinking problem but is an amazing communicator and a wonderful partner, and like, you know, that's not an invalid combination of events. Like, people are unique. Everyone's situation is a little bit different.
Yeah.
The question is the person that you're partnered with, is it a good relationship for you? Is it working for you?
Mm-hmm.
You know, and every situation is so unique.
Yeah.
We figured out how to make ours work. We both came into the relationship unlearning really unhealthy ways of being people on this planet. You yeah. know, I was only 2 years sober when I met Shannon. She was not even, I was like 1 year and like 10 months sober. Shannon was 1 year. I mean, it was brand new for both of us. It was way better than it had been, you know, 13 months and, you know, 24 months prior, respectively.
Totally. But like,
it has gotten so much better since then.
Yeah. Yeah.
Like we've learned together and we've helped each other learn, but we've also each had to do continuing learning and development on our own.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Like I'm hopefully, I think, a much better version of myself than I was even when you met me, you know?
Absolutely. I hope that that's true for me too. But
I think so.
Yeah. I mean, because this is an ongoing commitment to living this way.
Yeah.
You know, it's not a something that you do once and you check off and you're done.
No.
It's an ongoing taking inventory, checking in, keeping short accounts.
This is oddly tied to the topic in the first half.
Yeah.
This next right thing, really. I mean, it's a daily practice, right? Like, you can't just like do the work of being a good partner one and being a good person one time in your life and then coast on that for the rest of your life. Like, it's an everyday practice.
Right.
You know, taking your inventory, figuring out like what's working, what's not working, trying to get better the stuff that isn't, trying to signal boost the stuff that is.
Mm-hmm. And yeah, I thought it might be important to mention too, if there's anyone who's listening that's like, I've wondered if maybe I could benefit from a 12-step program because of fill in the blank of my life. There are so many programs available.
Yeah.
Just do a Google search for 12-step program and whatever issue it is that you're dealing with, whether it is a food-related issue or alcohol or drugs, of course, but also like codependency. There's being in a relationship with an addict. There's for like people who are gamblers or people who have clutter who hoard, you know.
Like, there's ones for people who abuse sugar. There's ones for people who overeat generally. I mean, it's so specific in some of the verticals.
If there is anything that you've heard in our discussion about any of this and you've identified like, okay, there's this area of my life that feels really out of control, that feels like it has control over me, you know, it's possible that it's probable that there are other people dealing with that in the world. And it's possible that there's a program that specifically addresses that particular thing. So just, you know, reach out to one of us if you want to, and we can help you look for resources, or just do a quick Google search on your own and see if you can find something in your area. But like doing something intentional in a supportive community with others who are experiencing the same kinds of, exploring the same kinds of healthy living, is there's just really no substitute for it.
Yeah, it's really cool. And failing anything else, go to coded.org and just do your questionnaire and see if it resonates with you.
Yeah.
That's a really good way to start.
Right. What is the saying? Like scratch the surface of any alcoholic and you find a codependent underneath.
Right underneath. Yep. Yeah. It was so funny because I met Shannon, right? And so Shannon, you know, she's like, I was in Coda. I was like, oh, cool, Coda, what's that? And she explained it. And she's like, they have a thing. You can go on their website and take this little survey. And I took the survey. And I was like, 15 for 15.
Woohoo!
Like, huh, that's interesting. Maybe I need to go to Coda too. And then kind of realize that like it's all the same stuff that you address, you know, but it's really funny. I mean, it's just the same stuff. It's all the same stuff. It's human stuff.
Yeah.
It's just being a human.
Yeah. So if you are a person out there who's listening and like, you know, is wanting to make a change in that area of your life, there's a place to help you do that. You can make that change.
Yeah.
You could start now.
And we hope you do.
Yeah.
If you need help, let us know.
Yeah.
We talk about sobriety a lot on this podcast.
We really do. Well, it's pretty integral into our lives.
It's part of our lives.
Here you all.
You know, it's part of our lives and it's our damn podcast.
That's right.
So there you go.
Amazing. Well, thank you so much for listening.
Very much, y'all.
I hope that the stuff we've rambled on about today has been in some form or other useful or entertaining or
helpful, inspiring. I don't know what the heck. Hopefully it's been good.
You're still here right now.
If you're still listening to this, clearly you got something out of it, right?
Yeah. You all, thank you so much for spending your time with us today. Yeah.
Go ahead.
No, you.
What was your conditional? We were both going to start with if. What was yours?
If you're not yet a supporting member of Misfit Stars, we hope that you would consider becoming one. You go to misfitstars.com and click the second big pink button and join us in support of what we're doing here.
Thank you. We appreciate that so much. You can get a t-shirt. You can get a sticker sheet. There's stuff you can get if getting stuff is important to you. If you just want abstractly to be a member and support what we're doing, cool. Thanks. There's levels for that too. Regardless, thank you. Thank you for listening. If you've gotten this far and you're hearing my voice and Shannon's voice right now, thanks. Thanks for sticking with us through this cool episode.
Yeah. And we're going to be off to Vermont this week.
Wow.
How exciting. But we'll be back next week.
Yep.
With more.
Yep.
So we'll see you when we see you.
Can't wait. Very excited. Thanks for listening, everyone.
Take good care of yourselves.
Talk to you soon.
Bye.
Bye.